and just waited for everyone to fight and like pop out of bush. What I didn't realise was he'd sat in dog in the bush.
It's a swift start for Stam as a hero is honoured on a day in the Medeski Stadium bathed in the sunshine. We'll reflect on Reading's 1-0 win over Preston as Plymouth and Wolves lie in wait. We'll also look back on some glory days with Kevin Doyle, while as always we'll get your views and opinions in the mailbag. All that plus much, much more on the Tyler Sen Podcast episode number 97. Hello and thank you for joining us. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of the Tyler Sen. Thank you very much for hitting that download button once again and joining us in our latest odyssey through all things Reading Football Club. Joining me this week, we're a man down, but you know, we've got the quality here, if not the quantity, as we have Dave Handbags-Harris. Dave, hello.
That's quite a build-up. Thank you very much. Hello.
You know, you build, you know, we said last week you're an A-lister now.
Well, absolutely. So I should be.
Yeah, you know, you come through the youth ranks of the podcast, making the odd sub-appearance, and now you're a first-team regular. So.
No, my 30s youth ranks, I like you. Keep it coming.
Well, you know, I'll do my very best over the next 45 minutes. So as I said, we've got a lot to get to. Yapstown's first competitive game in charge, thankfully ending on a winning note against Preston. We'll come to that very shortly. And as mentioned, we do have about a 20-minute interview with former Reading striker Kevin Doyle, so that will replace pub chat. So without further ado, let's delve into that win over Preston in the recap.
View from the Tarlhurst End.
Recapping this week's championship action.
So the Stam era gets off on a winning note as Reading produced a pretty comfortable win over Preston in the end, although the scoreline was just 1-0, as again they absolutely dominated, Dave. And it's one of the very rare games you can point to in recent years when Reading have thoroughly thumped their opposition in terms of possession. 80% in the first half, and it finished at 70% overall. Can you remember such a Reading performance where they've had so much of the ball?
Absolutely not. Mainly because looking back through the record books, there's not many times where we've actually played this style of football. Certainly not to such a level of domination anyway. I think it helped the way that Preston set themselves up. They were very defensive, very sort of sat back. The only two players that were really pressing were Joe Garner and Jermaine Beckford. It's kind of a fruitless task for those, and I can imagine that they got very, very fed up throughout the game. But you know, 80% possession is quite extraordinary, and you know that's almost Barcelona-like levels of possession. You know, I seem to remember when Barcelona played Celtic in the Champions League. Yes, Barcelona lost, but they had 80-odd% possession. So they're figures that you don't see very often. And of course, possession doesn't always tell the story. I have to say that for all the possession, we didn't create the sheer number of chances that you'd expect based on that. It's a very simplistic way of looking at things. But having said that, ultimately, thoroughly, thoroughly comfortable, thoroughly deserved victory.
Yeah, not much in way of clear-cut chances. It was one of those frustrating sort of afternoons in the final third where there were lots of great little teasing balls into the box and just seemed to miss players, or they didn't quite think the ball was going to come to them and they were just a step behind. So there was lots of times where the ball was in a dangerous area and there were some decent balls put in, but unfortunately they couldn't put them away. Obviously a massive chance coming for Dennis Rackles in the second half as well that should have put the game out of sight, and unfortunately he couldn't convert. But, you know, overall, it's a really positive start. You know, we were talking in this show last week, we didn't really know what we were going to expect from Reading. And we talked about how Preston had done so well at the Medeski Stadium on the last day of last season. But really, they turned up this time around, Dave, and they were pretty pedestrian. I think that's being generous.
To be perfectly frank, they just didn't look prepared. I mean, Simon Grayson came out afterwards and said that they were 2 yards off the post, which is quite extraordinary. You know, you base it on the fact that managers normally come out and say, yeah, we were a yard off the pace. To double that is almost unheard of. Of course, the unknown factor certainly plays into it. I mean, Grayson had obviously done some homework as well.
Well, if he'd read the Tyler Sen's tactical preview, he would have got everything he needed.
Well, absolutely. They'd probably have beaten us. but, you know, having said that, there's a fundamental level of preparation that you make in pre-season, and Preston just didn't seem to be there. They let us have the ball, and yet they weren't on it. They just simply weren't on it. They were better second half, but they still didn't create anything of their own making. And the two chances that they had were, you know, from fairly fundamental errors from Al Abzi and George Evans. So they really were well and truly behind where they should have been, I felt.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell on the negatives too much because there were so few to really pick up on. But just because you mentioned that chance, the chance that Reading sort of gave to Preston, how worried or were you not worried at all about the defence looking at that first performance of the season? Joey Vandenberg obviously taking his place at the heart of the defence, no Jake Cooper as well. People had picked that as a bit of a worry area going into the game. But how did you feel afterwards?
It's difficult to tell. Because Preston was so off the pace, you don't know how the defence are going to react to a team that are on it. I am a little concerned. I think the error that George Evans made is easily eradicated. The errors that Alabsi made, or the error that Alabsi made, isn't necessarily, because it's the sort of thing that he keeps on doing. I'm talking about the flap at the back, at the near post, from the set piece. Never a free kick in the first instance, but let's not dwell on that. Referees make mistakes.
You're being easy on a referee there, Dave. You've mellowed in your youth.
I've mellowed in my officiating years, yeah. I tend to understand why referees give decisions, or try to understand, shall I say. So going back to the original point, it's difficult to tell simply because Preston weren't on it. They didn't pressurise us. The only two players that were pressurising were Garner and Beckford. Nobody else was, and they didn't look like creating anything as a result.
No, Reading, on the other hand, as mentioned, I mean, they were really good. They imposed themselves in this game. They completely dictated the way the game was played.
The way it should be.
Yeah, exactly. Until possibly the last 10, 15 minutes when Preston started to throw the kitchen sink, and as you mentioned, there was a little bit of flapping, a little bit of defensive uncertainty. But you get that whenever you're holding on to a narrow lead, at least when you haven't got the sort of quality that Reading do. I mean, let's be honest, it was a great performance, but they're still not a team packed full of, you know, top quality Championship players, at least at the moment. Anyway, these players might well kick on and turn into that, but fantastic performance, really. As I said, dominating possession, didn't create too many chances, but the ones they did, they did pretty well with us. And it should have been 2-0. Dennis Reckles, a great ball in from John Swift, who scored the goal as well. And Dave, from a corner, no less.
Absolutely.
What is this witchcraft?
Who knows? It was something different. And PNE just didn't pick up on it at all. As soon as the ball came in, from both yours and our vantage points, you could see Swift was all alone. And very, very early on, from the moment the ball was kicked, it was going straight to him. No Preston defender reacted. But having said that, that's a difficult finish. Even if you are totally alone, to whip the ball in and with such accuracy and power. Normally they fly high and wide. You don't see many of those going in. And when they do go in, they're normally from a very, very technically gifted player. Which John Swift clearly is, based on that showing.
There was a great little takedown as well, just in front of the shot. I didn't actually see who it was. I think it might have been Paul McShane, but completely took out the Preston defender, NFL style or rugby style, to ease the path of the ball. So kudos there. But fantastic finish from Swift. He's taken lots of praise, understandably so, not just for this performance, but obviously he did well and got the goal against Bournemouth as well. So that's 2-2. For him now, how impressive overall are you with his play, and is he worth the hype?
At the moment, yeah. I'm genuinely impressed with him. I mean, his technical ability is up there with some of the best that we've seen at this club. Potentially, he's up there with Gilfy, I'd say, based on the 90 minutes. Of course, Gilfy was consistently good. And, you know, form is temporary, class is permanent, as they say. So it remains to be seen if he carries it on. But based on what we've heard and what we've read from Billy B, and what we've seen so far, the signs are good.
Yeah, the trick with any young player is obviously carrying on that potential. Unfortunately, football's littered with players who do really well at a young level, none more so than someone like a Royston Drenthe, for example. He does so well in his youth career that he gets called up, or Reading have seen it themselves, people like Leroy Leiter in the past, even going back a few years, Jamie Lambert, mm-hmm. someone like that.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got one in our ranks at the moment, sort of player who's plateaued at the very least in Jordan Obita. The hype was really quite high. He was being spoken of in potentially at some point of England, in England circles.
Yeah, he played for England under-21s, England under-20s.
Absolutely. And I remember a couple of interviews, there were tabloid newspaper interviews with, who's the West Ham chap? Trevor Brooking. who name dropped him on a regular basis as one to look for the future. He hasn't quite kicked on. Maybe the fact that he's playing at left back and not in his preferred position further up the pitch is stifling him. Who knows? As a left back, I've always said he's adequate. I thought he was going to kick on, but he hasn't quite. Hopefully, John Swift doesn't fall into that category.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And Jordan Abid, to be fair to him, had a decent game on Saturday. He was playing quite well. Both fullbacks did well. Chris Gunter as well, showing that solidity that he showed this summer with Wales at Euro 2016.
And we actually saw Chris Gunter whip in across.
I know.
Unbelievable.
He was great.
Maybe Yapstam's coaching him something. He's teaching him something.
It's that international mentality.
Absolutely.
He's brought with it. And that's... Of course, now, obviously, he'll play well and he'll be off by the end of the window. So
probably.
I thought exactly the same about Danny Williams as well, who had one of his best games, I think, in a Reading shirt. He was brilliant.
Yeah, all over the place. He was driving. He really drove the team on.
Am I just being cynical here in thinking and worrying that he's turning it on while that transfer window is open?
I'm very cynical of you.
I know. I've just seen it too many times.
We all have. Possibly, but then Danny Williams is the sort of player that you know is giving 100, 110% every single game. I think potentially the Preston setup favoured him. The tactics favoured him. It was very clear that Swift and Williams were advanced up the pitch much further forward than Evans. Maybe that favoured him. Who knows? I don't think it's just a case of him opening up his repertoire because the transfer window's open. I don't read much into the interview he had recently, put it that way.
Yeah, it's again, I mean, I asked you the same question last week about Oliver Norwood, who has gone since that last podcast, and we'll come on to that very briefly in News Bites. But same question with Danny Williams now. He is a high earner. He's only got 1 year left on his deal, and it's a team very much in transition. If you get a bid tomorrow from Danny Williams for an acceptable fee, are you taking it or are you saying, no, I want to keep you for these last 12 months and see how this team does?
Based on the finances and the fact that it would free up so much money, I would be inclined to take it. It just makes simple and sound business sense. And we've got the replacements. Certainly, I can't believe we wouldn't have a potential replacement lined up, if not already in the squad.
Yeah, it's a really difficult season, especially on the back of such a good performance. It's one of those things where you could tell the fan base would be a little bit deflated if they do see him go. I know he's a player that split opinion over the summer. There's been lots of sort of, you know, get him out of the club and lots of, no, keep him, he's one of our best players. And he's that divisive sort of figure in the same way of a Hal Robson Kanu or a Joby McAnuff of the past. But like you say, on the financial side of things, you have to keep an eye. You can't get carried away with a 1-0 win over Preston on the opening day. You've got to keep that overall mentality that was sort of pervading around the club, that this was a long-term project. And if you can bring in a young, hungry midfielder on the up, another John Swift type, with that money that you free up from Danny Williams, even if it's not now and it's in January, then I think you'd have to take it. But if he does end up staying here for the rest of the season, if he puts in performances like that, we'll have no complaints because he'll certainly help us pick up a few points. George Evans as well, you mentioned, you know, filling in for Oliver Norwood, who's gone to Brighton. In that nice little pivot point of the midfield, how do you think he got on? Because we didn't really see a lot of him last season, or certainly not a lot of positive things from him. How do you think he's come on since last year?
Based on that 90 minutes, it was really quite positive. Again, a hark back to the simple fact that it's very difficult to draw anything from the game based on just how unprepared Preston were. Based on the fact that, as I said before, there was only Garner and Beckford pressing. There wasn't a great deal of pressing on him. The one time that I vaguely remember it, I'd say not vaguely, it's obviously clear in the mind, actually, that he was pressed. Either he didn't receive a shout, didn't expect Johnson to be there, but Johnson nipped it in. They got one of their only shots on target from it. A clear sight on goal. There's learning to be done. And I think... as I say, based on the performance, it's positive, but we can't draw too much from it at this point in time.
Yeah, lots to look at. I thought that sort of finishing our look through the team from back to front, the forward line was okay. Dennis Rackles, for me, though, doesn't suit that central striker position.
No, he struggled all game, I thought, and you need a presence there. I personally would have preferred to have seen Kermigant there. I think Kermigant's been on the back end of an unwarranted level of negativity since he arrived. It was fairly clear that it wasn't quite working for him under McDermott. Despite his perseverance, he still gave 100%. You could see what he was trying to do, and some of the little tricks and flicks that he was he was giving weren't just because they were poorly executed. They weren't necessarily that. It was because he didn't have the support around him. You know, remember we discussed back in January, February time when McDermott was playing with a forward three or forward one with two wide players. You had Ola John and Hal Robson-Kanu who were nowhere near him, who were supposed to be who were supposed to be supporting him. So I'd like to see Kermigan there again. I think the role suits him far better than Rackles. But having said that, Rackles should have notched.
Yeah, I mean, Kermigan, he'll thrive if they keep playing this system of that sort of, as Will described it in the tactics article, kind of a WW formation. If he's got players like Williams and Swift running on.
Yeah.
We even saw it briefly. There was one little nice little flick he did through to somebody. I can't remember who it was late in the game. Just to sort of set forward an attack. I don't think it came to anything. It might have been for Callum Harriet's chance.
Possibly,
My memory might be failing me in my old age. But you could see the qualities there. And if he does have players running on, and Behrens as well, and whoever else is playing out wide, Gareth McCleary, if it is Harriet, that's the sort of things he needs. That's how he thrived when he was playing at Bournemouth, because he had a Callum Wilson or a Lewis Grabban there to run on and get in front of him. And it didn't quite work out that way last year. I know he did have a couple of good moments with Rackles, but fingers crossed with that more pace, he can sort of come on and thrive. But
absolutely, yeah.
Overall, really good, solid win. Clean sheet's always good. Yeah, you like to see more goals, but at the end of the day, it only takes one to win the game. Reading got 3 points. They've started on a right positive foot. And it's unlike... there were slight moments when I did think back to that Brendan Rodgers first game. That 0-0 against Nottingham Forest, where we saw some equally pretty football, some equally nice possession. But in the end, they didn't get the goal they needed. It was a 0-0.
Yeah.
And I think then they went up to Newcastle and got thumped. And the pressure built on Brendan Rodgers really quickly. And if you remember, he didn't get that home win until, was it November against Blackpool?
Blackpool. I mean, the squad, the side back then, admittedly, were in a right old rut. We didn't win. I think if I recall, we won 3 home games in the calendar year 2008.
2009 even.
2009, sorry. Absolutely. What was it? Watford 4-0, Wolves 1-0, and then Blackpool. Yeah. We didn't beat anybody else. I see the point that you're making regarding the Forest game. Again, you know, it was youthful, it was exuberant, it was a complete change in style. But as you say, we didn't get the goal. This time we did, and hopefully we can push on from that.
Yeah, well, it does a lot of things. I mean, it buys him time. Well, it doesn't buy him time. That sounds like he's under pressure. But it gives fans confidence in what he's doing because he's gone and got the result. It's not, we should have probably won that game. We didn't. Maybe if he had played a different way of football, we would have won that game.
Yeah.
He's done exactly. He's kept the clean sheet. He's got the 3 points. Not only does it boost his stock with the fans and give the sort of whole place a good feel-good factor right away, it also helps the players because the players are like, well, he's been telling us to do these things in training and you know what? It's worked and we've won the game. Yeah. I'm going to listen to what he's got to say.
Yeah.
Whereas if you get a few bad results to start with, you're kind of like, does this guy really know what he's talking about? We've been playing X number of games and we haven't got the results yet. Maybe I'll just not listen to him as much and do my own thing. We might get a win. None of that applies now because they've got this win. And even if they go on and have a bad week, they've still got that to fall back on. And you can say, well, you play like you did against Preston, we'll get more results. So fantastic way for Stam to win. The stadium felt good as well. There was a really good vibe. Obviously, unfortunately, it was a bit of a... not somber, but there was a slightly sort of sad, trying to think of the right word to describe it, if you know what I mean, around Eamon Dolan. It was a very emotional, is probably the best word to describe it, time around kickoff. And fans singing Eamon Dolan's name throughout the game as well. Very emotional scenes before the game and the mural they've done outside the ground of the picture of Eamon, made up of all the academy products that come through and has watched. Fantastic tribute by the club. This club does get stick from fans for many things. And, you know, we've had the odd pop on this very show. But over the whole Eamon thing, I can't point to a single thing where I thought they could have done more. I think they've been brilliant. And Saturday was a very fitting tribute in my book.
Yeah, they've done absolutely the right thing all the way through. It's a credit to the club.
Yeah, and once again, our thoughts with Eamon's family and friends, and hopefully Saturday gave them that little bit of comfort in what has been a very difficult summer for them, and fitting that Reading got the win as well, and the 33rd I believe, academy product that has come through Eamon's academy. Made an appearance later on as well, Tenai Watson.
Yeah.
Coming on in slightly unfortunate circumstances, Jordan Obita picking up a bit of an injury. We understand it's just cramp, though, so he shouldn't be out for too long. But what did you make of his little cameo?
It's positive. There was one little error right towards the end. There was a little bit of panic. I think he passed the ball out for a corner when the player who was challenging him had gone down when he didn't need to touch it. But apart from that, there wasn't anything really there to suggest that he wouldn't fit in. Give it time, though, obviously. Let's not overhype him too much. Quite pleased with what I saw. And speedy as well.
Yeah, and another debutant off the bench as well, Callum Harriott, who signed in midweek after we'd recorded our show. Though we didn't really think that a winger was an area that Yapstan was going to invest in, but he brought him in, primarily a left winger, although he played out on the right, replacing Gareth McCleary, who looked like he was struggling a little bit. As the game wore on, I think just before he came off, he made a really bursting run. I think that literally just emptied what was left in the tank.
Yeah, so I saw McCleary as soon as he'd done that, look over to the bench and signal, take me off.
On a very hot day as well. I mean, you're talking, it was 25 degrees as I looked on my phone in the stand. So on the pitch, it probably would have been closer to 30 as well. So good shift for him, someone who wasn't fully fit. But missed our new signing, happy?
Based on what I've seen, it's, you know, say again, it's literally only half an hour of football. He looked as though he could certainly hit someone on the break. He didn't look out of his depth at all. There were a couple of instances where the delivery could have been better. But give him time and let him bed in and see what happens.
So based on that performance then, obviously great start, as we've said repeatedly, but what still needs to be done for you? We were talking last week about bringing in some reinforcements, especially in the defence. Are you still in favour of that?
I think we still need to, don't we? Because it's so paper thin. If anything happens to Paul McShane, I think we're stuffed. Based on what I saw Saturday, I don't think Joey Vandenberg is the answer at central defence. We need a central defender. If Stam doesn't fancy Cooper, he needs to go out and invest. Hopefully that will happen this week.
Yeah, we'll come on to the latest speculation in News Bites in just a few minutes' time. So, as mentioned, fantastic win. And just to cap off the day, not only was DJ Mega Party on holiday, so we had a nice, blissful Mega Party free zone, but we had a surprise visitor. Well, not really a surprise, actually, Dave, because if you read the article I did about the meeting we had with Tiger early in the summer, I'd mentioned the fact that he was thinking about joining the fans up in the stands. Now, it's easy for someone to say that, but true to his word, Tiger popped up in Y25, Y26,
yep,
and sat with the fans for the whole of the second half. Nice to see.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I'd say he was certainly very committed to doing it in the meeting that we attended. And afterwards, he came up to me and spoke to me about various different things in a sort of a informal manner. And one of those things was, I'll see you in Y26.
And sure enough, he did. Did he get you a pint, though?
He did.
No way.
He got me a pint afterwards. He bought my pint, yeah.
Excellent. Down in the hotel. Good man. This is a good man, yeah. Sam Lomax brought up the point. He said, what did you make of Tiger's visit to Y26? It's great seeing Ona get involved with fans. And fully agree. It can only strengthen the bond between, especially when it comes in a win. I don't know what the reaction would have been if Redden had conceded 2 second-half goals. Although he wasn't getting involved in that argy-bargy, there was a little bit of handbags, not you,
obviously,
up in that top corner. I think some Preston fans snuck behind the scoreboard.
By all accounts, they did, yeah. I mean, I went up to a steward afterwards and said, what was it all about? You know, I'm always interested in that kind of thing from a distance. And sad that you're not at the end there. He just said that a couple of Preston fans snuck into the home ends from behind the scoreboard. What their incentive was, I have no idea. But, you know, why bother? It's just a bit of...
Yeah, what is the ultimate end result there?
Who knows? All it does is just riles up the home fans and things get a little bit shirty. And suddenly you've got an atmosphere.
Yeah, on an individual basis, at worst you look like an idiot because you've goaded and not gone through with it. I say best, but it's not really best. You're getting a football banning order or you're getting arrested. So just have a think about it.
Yeah, people. And so that certainly the club will report that back to PNE, yeah, and whatever PNE do is up to them.
Yeah, and likewise to Reading fans as well. I know it is tempting to sort of reciprocate or sort of, you know, show that, you know, you're defending your territory. But again, do you really want a banning order or, you know, getting in trouble with the police for the sake of a, you know, an away fan. Just don't do it. Just be the bigger men.
Mm-hmm.
Be the bigger
men. Certainly don't do it in the away ground, because all that will happen is you'll have your ticket taken off you. You'll be booted out the ground, and the club will send that ticket, or certainly send that those ticket details back to Reading Football Club, who have recorded those ticket details on their own systems. And, you know, that's the way they get around issuing certainly local banning orders.
Exactly.
And if there's anything more in a legal sense, then you're risking a full-on football banning order, which is, you know, pretty much 3 years.
Exactly.
Across the country.
So have a good think before you get involved in any of that.
And don't forget, of course, on top of that, if you get a football banning order, you have to submit your passport every time England play away.
Indeed. So, yeah, have a think about it. As I said, didn't seem, thankfully, nothing too violent. It looked very much like, I said, handbags. But again, it's you know, as mildly amusing as it is, you don't want to see it, even if it is in small things. You just, you know, just get on with the football. It was distracting the crowd for a good 10 minutes. So better to get back and focus on the matters on the pitch, which we will do, or kind of on the pitch, the players that might be popping onto the pitch for Reading in the near future. We'll cover that in News Bites.
Reading News Bites
on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Not an awfully busy News Bites this week after the mammoth effort, I think, record that we set last week of about 50 minutes discussing all the summer news. This one's going to be a much quicker section. Just a couple of stories I wanted to bring up, Dave. The first is transfer speculation, and it revolves around a player. We touched on it in the recap. Liam Moore, still no deal done. Here, there seems to be, I chatted with Charles Watson, it just seems to be a hold-up on the Leicester end of things. I don't think it's to do with Liam Moore, by all accounts. Although news, speculation coming out over the weekend that Leeds have come in for him as well. Do you see this one going through, or is this going to Tommy Smith all over us?
The longer it goes on, the more worried you become. Mainly because he'd had some vital experience at the back. Which we're desperately short of. It's slightly irritating that other clubs are coming in for him. But then, you know, if we, by all accounts, if Moore wants to come to Reading, and it sounds like that he's already, you know, seems to have agreed terms, I really don't know what the holdup is. And I don't know why it's not going through. So I wonder. Well, he's not got a squad number at Leicester either, has he, this year?
No.
So, you know, you wonder.
He definitely seems to be on his way out. It's a case of where and when.
Yeah. So, you know, are we not paying them enough? What, you know, what's the hold-up? You know, are we not meeting the Leicester valuation? So, I understand Tigers actually got personally involved. But, you know, it'd be tie on tie then, wouldn't it? So, you know, who knows what's going to happen, but I just hope it goes through.
Yeah, there was talk of friendliness between the two sets of owners, whether that was just casual media speculation because it's two sets of Thai owners, I don't know. Kind of like when you go abroad and someone says, oh, do you know X from London? As if you know all 5,999,999 of the other Londoners out there.
Yeah, quite. Yeah.
Although then, funnily enough, it turns out that, funnily enough, you do know them. So
occasionally, small world.
But Liam Moore
six
has
degrees of separation, isn't
indeed.
It? What
they say? Everyone's connected to Kevin Bacon, aren't they? Liam Moore's putting on his social media on Twitter today. Back at it tomorrow. Let's see what this week brings. So it looks like he's kind of settling in for the long haul. Because you'd imagine if it was imminent, he would be keeping his silence. So it looks like this one might drag on for a little bit. But fingers crossed. Stam as well saying he would like to get a striker in as well. Quotes on Get Reading along those lines. So it does look like Reading, the transfer business isn't done, Dave.
No, looks that way, which kind of ties in what we were told in the in that funky meeting that we had with the owner.
Yeah, we were told to expect lots of changes this summer, and so far these lived up to his word. 8 signings and seemingly at least a couple more to come. So fingers crossed they do get those deals done, because you want to get those players bedded in, you want to get a system in place. And on the other hand, if players are to be sold, you want to get them out as early as possible.
Absolutely.
And that has happened with Oliver Norwood, a deal wrapped up very quickly indeed. Sounded like it all transpired within a week. We were talking about how all the links had cooled with teams like Burnley and Hull, and it's Brighton who've nipped in and signed him. We don't know a fee. It seems that it was Norwood's decision to go. It wasn't Reading's decision that they wanted to sell him. Stam seemed very disappointed that Norwood had gone. But Ollie had made his mind up and he has moved down to the South Coast. He started on the bench, came on as a... I'm not sure if he did come on as a sub now. I'm trying to remember. I did look this up earlier. This shows the unprofessional joke of a preparedness I've done. But anyway, I know he started 100% on the bench for Brighton. He's been talked about starting in the EFL Cup game this week. Good move for him?
It's a good move for him, yeah. Brighton are a club on the up. It won't be long before they're in the Premier League. Matter of time territory, really. Can't really blame him for moving. He's had two stagnant years at Reading, really, based on where, you know, where we were. He's not really improved on Huddersfield. 17th and a 19th place finish. That's but roughly where you'd expect Huddersfield to finish, and that's pretty much where they did finish under it, with him in their side. There's undoubtedly that Brighton will have probably, I won't say undoubtedly, probably, there's totally two contradictions in terms there. I think it's almost certain that that Brighton will have offered him more money. I'd like to hear an estimated transfer fee at the very least. I hope we've made a profit on him.
You would like to think so. We signed him for just over £1 million, didn't we? So you'd imagine it'd be round about the sort of, I mean, we got 3 to 4 million for Nick Blackman, who had 6 months left on his deal. So you'd like to think for an established international, we were sort of knocking around that figure.
Yeah.
And especially with Reading not being determined to sell, I think they were in a decent position of strength to dictate terms. But I was invited onto BBC Radio Berkshire the day after the deal was done to have a chat with Andrew Peach and AD Williams. And AD was very sort of, like, you could tell he was upset with the deal. He thought it was a big mistake for Reading to let him go. How big of a blow? Obviously, we've got the benefit of hindsight in having seen that game now, but even before that game, how big of a blow would you have said it was to Reading squad?
In terms of purely down to experience and technical ability, it's a fairly big blow. But having said that, there's a very good article on the website that argues the case for why we shouldn't have kept him. And it's very difficult to argue against that when you look at the reasons brought up.
Yeah, Raw Hoops is 6 reasons why the Norwood deal makes sense. If you have a little dig around the front page, I'm sure you can still find that. So yeah, Oliver Norwood has moved on. Whether anyone will follow, the sort of trail's gone cold on players like Chris Gunter, Danny Williams and Jake Cooper, as well as some of the younger players who haven't got squad numbers as well. But as I said, you know, the Norwood deal came very quickly. So things will move rapidly in the coming weeks, especially once the Premier League kicks off, because as soon as injuries start happening or teams get off to bad starts, that's when the big fish start circling. Even bigger championship sides, we've seen Aston Villa and Newcastle lose on the opening weekend. You know, if they start having another couple of games, they're going to be trying to panic buy, you would imagine. So we are not safe yet, no matter. And we've seen, Yapstammer said he wanted to keep Oliver Norwood and Aaron Tischboller. Both have gone. Tish definitely did come off the bench for Aston Villa, play the last 15 minutes or so. Did okay, although again they conceded late and lost. So it shows the sort of position Reading are in, that they can't keep hold of these players. And financially, if these good deals are presented, we're no longer, with the parachute payments ending this year, we're no longer in a position to dig our heels in to reject those. So we're at the mercy of those bigger fish, so we will see what transpires over the next couple of weeks until the window shuts. But anyway, let's move on to a player who, one of our best transfer deals of all time, I would certainly say. Mr. Kevin Doyle, he sat down with our assistant editor, Ollie, and some good little stories going on with this one, Dave. We've just given it a listen before the show began. So, stay tuned for that. I will warn you, if you have delicate ears, there is one naughty word towards the end of the show. So if you do have sensitive ears or you do have a youngster listening in the car, I do apologise. There is just one little naughty word in there. So with that in mind, here is one Kevin.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Up first, how did the move to Reading come about? And Ben Print asks, were there any other teams in for you at the time?
A long time ago now, I'm trying to remember the exact details. I remember Brian McDermott came to watch me a few times playing in Ireland, and he gave a positive report or whatever, and I played a number of times for Ireland 21s and done okay, so I think they were quite interested. And Steve Coppell came to see me twice, I think. So they did the homework. It was it wasn't a massive fee or anything they were paying for me, but they definitely came to look at me a number of times, and that was nice too. The fact that Steve Kopp was coming to watch me meant that, you know, I was gonna he knew it and what way I was gonna play if they did sign me, and with an eye to playing in the first team straight away. So That was it. They put in an offside out of a release call with my team in Ireland, Cork City. So they just matched that. And it was reasonably straightforward, I suppose. Was there other teams in for me? I think, trying to remember the time, I remember that possibly Burnley and Stoke were at that time, at the similar time. But they were more right at the end when they saw that Reading had a bit accepted. They were like, oh, well, if Reading are trying to sign him, we'll sort of try signing too. But Reading had done, you know, all the groundwork. As far as I knew anyway, I don't remember being told that either their managers or anyone had come to watch me. I think they were just going to rely on Reading's homework and try nip in at the same time.
Brilliant. So Tom Hawthorne says, what were your hopes and expectations ahead of the 2005-06 season? Because obviously you didn't sort of start the season as Reading's main striker. So
No, my hopes. I was just hoping to maybe make a handful of starts, basically, and come on as a sub and try to get a handful of starts. I didn't expect to be in the team to begin with at all. You know, I was hoping to sort of just slowly bed myself in, get used to living in a different country and get used to my surroundings. And, you know, after 5 or 6 months, hope to start making some starts. And, so my expectations weren't massively high. I thought, if you know, in 6 months to a year, I thought I could get myself in the team. I believed in myself that way, but I just didn't expect it to be so soon.
So obviously it turned out you played a key role in that fantastic season. And so what point in that season did you realise that you were part of something, you know, really, really special here?
We never relaxed, you know. We sort of believed, but didn't, you know, we just didn't want to believe in case it all went pear-shaped. So it was, you know, until it was mathematically certain. But I remember at the start of the season, we obviously lost the first game of the season, but we went on an unbeaten run of whatever it was, 32 or 3 games. But say 7 or 8 games into that unbeaten run, I remember we were Norwich away. Teams who've just been relegated, it was a game, Crystal Palace at home. Teams who'd just been relegated the season before to the Premier League who were like, as usual, the teams that get relegated from the Premier League are massive favourites to go back up every year. You know, that year it was the exact same. It was, oh, this is the strongest championship ever. Look at the teams who've come down. And you hear it every single season. They'll say the same thing. It's the strongest championship ever. Look who's just come down. And usually those teams have a bit of a nightmare. But I remember we were at Norwich away and they really outplayed us on the day, really outplayed us, and we managed, I think, to draw 1-1, and it just seemed that everything went our way, and we got a little bit of luck and everything went away, and then we sort of started to believe in ourselves, and stuff. Instead of getting luck, we just started to play really well and really destroy teams, and you know, when we started to beat teams 3-4-0, and it was that game at Crystal Palace in the Medeski Stadium where it was a really good game, we played really well. It was a maybe been a draw, and yet we might have won, or was it a draw? Was it 3-2 or 3-3? But sort of games like that where you think we're matching it with these teams, still unbeaten, and we were first or second in the league. You know, there was no one point, it was just some good performances, and they kept coming and coming. And not till March, maybe. We went to Cheltenham in March as a team, as a sort of staff and team. And we were maybe 15 points clear or something, and we realized at that stage that, you know, we could enjoy the trip to Cheltenham. Yeah. Sheffield United who were second at the time were also there, mm-hmm. but they enjoyed it as much as us. They were they were fighting in a battle to secure that second and third place. I remember having a conversation with lads going, oh, I wouldn't like to be here if we were in their position. You know, it's not something you can come and enjoy when you were in the position they're in, whereas we were there as sort of unofficial league winners at the time, are definitely going to be promoted, and that was a lot of fun to be able to do something like that in March, which is very unusual, to be able to basically, you know, be able to do something, enjoy it with your teammates and not feel the pressure. That was good fun.
Mm-hmm. So what was it about that team that made it so good? Because obviously there weren't there were players who were coming to the end of their careers, there were players who were just starting their careers like yourself. What sort of brought that team together and made it so special that they went on to get the record?
I don't know. I wish I knew the answer. you know, in pre-season, when I first come, the first weeks, we wouldn't have even nearly had a starting 11. We had waiting to sign players, and it was, you know, I don't know. Everyone gelled pretty much straight away. Everyone was, we only had a core of maybe 14 or 15 players who played. If one or two were injured, we had one or two who come in, and you know, it looked seamless. And getting through those games early in September, October, where we were able to get those results against those top teams who just got relegated. I don't know, just snowballed. I can't say everyone just had the season of their lives. The management and the staff and everyone seemed to be just, you know exactly what they were doing. We had some great people behind the scenes with coaches and staff and fitness coaches and physios. Everyone, I suppose, outperformed themselves. And it's hard to pinpoint why we could sign in that season, I suppose. You know, Brian McDermott and Nicky Hammond did a great job getting the right people in. And, yeah, it's hard to, you know, if I could tell you, it'd be easy to replicate. But it was just a once-in-a-lifetime, as we hold a record, so it is a sort of a once-in-a-lifetime thing. But it was unbelievable fun being involved in it that season. It was just crazy.
Yeah. So there have been a lot of questions about what your favourite goal was for Reading, which probably Leicester?
That was like the most relief goal. It was, you know, we had so many games left after that. It wasn't like it was the end of the world if we didn't, but it was just nice to... It was our first opportunity to do it, I think, that day, to get automatically promoted, and we went and did it. We didn't play well that day. We were up, so, you know, waiting for a few months for that day to come where we could officially get promoted. So, yeah, scoring that day was brilliant. That day, I don't know, if we were in all white jerseys that day, and there were probably triple XL. There was some sort of kit clash. Some mess up with the kids. It wasn't our... We'd never worn that kit before. It wasn't an official Reading kit. It was just made up for us the day before, basically, by Puma, whoever, and got sent down. And every kit was long sleeves and, like, triple XL. Before the game, we were all cutting our sleeves off. If you look at the pictures, you'll realise now how big the jerseys were if you look back at it. Still have that jersey. It hadn't been washed. It's still got mud all over it at home in Ireland. And that was the most relief to score that day. Was a great, unbelievable feeling, yeah. But it was more of a relief feeling. My favourite goal, I think, was early on. It was against Crystal Palace at home, and it was my, you know, I'd scored a few goals before that, but this was sort of a good goal. I think I got the ball on the halfway line and went through and had a shot from outside the box. And they'd just been, obviously, just in the Premier League, and they were a good team at the time. And, you know, sort of, you know, I'd had a few goals, and this was more like, you know, sort of doing it against a bigger team and an impressive goal, and that sort of really gave me confidence and got me going and kept me in the team for the long run.
So who was the best player you played with at Reading?
There's
probably a lot to choose from.
Yeah, there is. You know, because everyone in that season and the season after, everyone basically had the season of their lives, so or the couple of seasons of their life. So to pick one, it's difficult. You know, the most sort of naturally skilled player who just surprised you unbelievably because his body just didn't look like he could do it was Glenn Little. he was, you know, he surprised me from day one in training. He could do anything. He struggled to stay fit in the long run, but that season he was fit all the time. But For the surprise factor, if you were to look at him, you never knew he was a soccer player or an athlete. You wouldn't really thought he could do what he did, and his ability and his skill and his delivery was, you know, he set me up so many goals as well. Glenn Little, as all the Bobby Convey, Hunty when he came on, Nicky Shorey from left back, the amount of goals he set up from left back as well. You know, everyone, you know, City and Harps and Middle Rumble that season. But just, yeah, Glenn Little, just because of his, you know, just the surprise factor. With his height and everything, to have the skill. And he wasn't quick, but he still used to beat defenders, no problem. He called it his chop in and chop out. And he was a funny fella as well. He was good for our group. He was non-stop joker. So, yeah, it was, I don't know who the fans' favourite was out of those guys, but Glenn, for the surprise factor, I'd give it to him.
Yeah. So, Connor says, if you could change one thing about your time at Reading, what would it be?
My third season there, a season in the Premier League, when we got relegated on the last day. What would I change about that? I think just we took our foot off the pedal. You know, me and all of us, I suppose. I was, you know, looking back, you had such a good couple of seasons. And we were about mid-table around Christmas time that third season, the second season in the Premier League. And maybe if we'd have been a bit lower in the league at the time, we'd have been better off, because we just sort of were mid-table from Christmas. And I think we all just relaxed a little bit and got cut out. And, you know, because we were where we were at the table, we didn't really make any signings to impact us in January that year, I think. And we just got cut out at the death of the season. We didn't realise we were in a relegation battle probably for the last month of the season. And it was just, you know, we got full difference in the end. Fulham managed to have a miraculous escape and win all their remaining games. And we just, you know, I had a disappointment. And it was, you know, first time in that situation in a relegation battle, didn't realise we were in it, and yeah, just wasn't on the best form myself. A lot of the lads weren't, and we were all caught cold, basically. That was really disappointing.
So I wasn't sure to ask this question, but it was quite popular on Twitter. Someone asked, what is the most stupid thing you've seen Noel Hunt do? He's just signed for Pompey today as well, so.
He's what?
He's just signed for Pompey today as well, so.
Yeah, oh. If I had time to think about this, I would probably come up with something. Because I have seen him do plenty of silly things. more true pure than anything else. I think he tried to claim. Do you remember the Watford goal away from home when there was no goal? Was that Watford away?
Yeah, Watford away. Yeah.
I think Noel tried to claim that goal as his because he touched it about 5 minutes earlier or something. that got a good laugh in the dressing room.
He seemed like quite a funny character to have around the training ground in the dressing room.
Yeah, he still is, Noel. Yeah, he's full of energy. Just, he's a good guy, Noel. He's crazy in a good way.
So, finally, obviously, you're playing for Colorado Rapids now.
I've got another one on Noel.
Go on.
This one definitely won't be known. We had a Christmas do in Brighton, and Noel dressed up as, like, a bush, basically. and hid in a bush outside of a bar that we were in. We could all see him out in the bush and just waited for everyone to go by and, like, pop out a bush. What I didn't realise was he'd sat in dog in the bush. So he'd come back in for the night. He was stinking for the night. But gave us a good laugh anyway.
Okay, so how are you finding life in the States and playing in the MLS with Colorado Rapids?
It's good for us. It's a total change of experience to what I was... Well, I've been used to, and that's what I wanted. So I've been in England just over 10 years at the time when I decided to come, and I wanted something that would be sort of a motivation for the last few years of my career, and it's something exciting for the last few years. And
you think you're going to finish your career in the States?
Yeah, that's the plan. Next couple of years and finish here. And 30. I'm 32 now. I'll be 33 in a month's time. It's going quickly.
Yeah.
I don't feel it. In my head, I'm 21 still, but I've really enjoyed it. It's so weird. You know, you travel 3 or 4 hours to every away game on an airplane, and you know, everywhere's just so different. But this fantastic facilities, it, you feel like it's something that's growing all the time. Everyone's really, really excited by it in America, and it's the fastest growing sport there at the moment. And just for me personally, to be able to go to all these cities, see places I've never seen around a place, and you know, I wouldn't have done that as a tourist. You know, some of the places, the random places I've been in America already, that, you know, you just never be to. And it's a great experience outside of football, from a personal point of view. But the football has been brilliant as well. I really enjoyed it. You know, really look after you out here. The facilities and everything are top class. And, you know, anyone who asked me about it, who's ever thinking of doing it, I'd highly recommend it.
It sounds a great experience. So thank you very much for taking the time to answer the questions.
No problem, Ollie. I've enjoyed it. It's been a while since I spoke about Reading, so nice to have a recap and
no worries.
Best part of my career, I'd imagine. So
yeah, it certainly provided me and thousands of other Reading fans some of the best seasons of our lives. So
yeah, good times.
It was. Thank you very much, Kevin.
No worries. Cheers,
hi. Bye.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst.
So again, a massive thank you to Kevin for taking time out of his day to sit down and chat with Ollie. Very much appreciate it anytime we get a guest on. And we've been lucky to have some good names on the show. We've had the likes of Stuart Lovell, John Halls, Simon Shepherd.
Simon Osborne.
Yeah, we've had a few names on here popping up over the years, and fingers crossed we'll have quite a few more as the year progresses. Shakislop as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
if you go to the players interview section on the main page, it's about 2/3 of the way down. You can check out some of those. And again, big thank you to Kevin. We'll come on to the mailbag very shortly, Dave. People getting in lots of reactions to that win over Preston. But any thoughts from that Doyle interview?
Yeah, there's a couple of them. Certainly a couple of enlightening stories are the one that you mentioned with the naughty word in at the end.
I hadn't
actually heard that one before, which is mildly amusing. There's a bit of Twitter bait for Noel Hunt there, I think. I was a little bit disappointed, actually, in one thing that he said. It was towards the back end of the 7-8 relegation season. And he alluded to the fact that the players didn't realise they were in a relegation battle until about a month before the end. And I find that difficult to comprehend, based on the fact that in January and February we went 8 games or an 8-game losing streak in the league. Admittedly, in that 8-game losing streak, we played Villa twice, who were towards the top end of the Premier League under Martin O'Neill. We played Man United, we played Chelsea. The games we were kind of half, well, United and Chelsea we were expected to lose. Villa, we were probably, you know, we'd have taken a point, certainly at home. But the insipid nature of some of those defeats, obviously Bolton was in that run as well. We started to get it together again in March, just after we beat Middlesbrough. Koppel made 5 or 6 changes, went between the Villa and the Middlesbrough games. We won it with a last-minute winner, James Harper. We had a decent March, and then it all went pear-shaped with the suspension of Marek Matejowski after he was sent off against Blackburn. We went up to Newcastle, a place where we almost always lose. And you know, the long and short of it is I find it very, very difficult to comprehend why they didn't feel they were in a relegation battle. When even when we were sort of lower mid-table, sort of 13th, 14th, we're still only 5 or 6 points off the relegation zone.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's some of the issues again, and John's going to start owing me royalties soon, but if you do read the sum of the parts by John Keane, again, he sort of goes into some of those issues and in the interviews, and those sort of similar stories are starting to emerge. I think Koppel himself has hinted to the fact he was too loyal and kept too settled aside for too long. And,
yeah,
and we could,
that ties in with a lot of stuff that he was saying at the time.
And
well,
we could have a separate podcast entirely on what went wrong in 07-08, but we've got a lot to get through, so we won't do it here. Again, if you've got the feedback for Kevin again, leave it on the article. I said thank you again for giving the time, and if you've got any contacts, you know, if you want us to interview someone, give us a suggestion, and we'll do our very best to try and get them on the show. Right, anyway, the real stars of the show now, forget Kevin Doyle, we've got the mailbag, Dave, full, not quite as full as last week, but still a generous helping of feedback.
Yeah, it's only a week though, isn't it? Right,
it is.
6 weeks, true. 8 weeks or whatever it was.
Starting with Jack Killick, who emails in under the title of Paul McShane. Obviously, the defence didn't have much to do against Preston, but I thought McShane looked shaky at times, and if anything, Vandenberg looked a lot more solid. What are your thoughts on McShane's performance? Apart from that, obviously a great win and bring on Wolves.
I don't think he looked that, you know, particularly bad, to be honest with you.
He was okay.
He was
outpaced a couple of times.
Yeah, pace has never been his strong point, has it? It's been all about sort of positioning. You know, the guy's an international quality defender. When you get a guy, you know, isolated, as McShane occasionally finds himself, he's going to struggle against that kind of thing. But then every defender, you know, has that. Mm. Typical McShane, really, in many ways.
Got himself booked for a bit of a naughty tackle.
Yeah. It was a little bit frustrating, but you know, based on a couple of things that went before. But hey, you know, typical McShane. I thought it was wholehearted, committed, dependable, and long may it continue in a Reading shirt.
Yeah, indeed. I thought he had a fairly decent game. It wasn't vintage by any stretch of the imagination, but I think he did okay.
Yeah, he didn't need to be vintage, though, did he?
No, exactly. Right, Notorious, who is a helping lead our listener and reader prediction league this year. He helps do the Reading away day videos. He said, first half may have been some of the best football we've seen for a couple of years. Great result. And Alex Everson says, super impressed with even the change of form from Bournemouth. Acid test as if the first half performance is a one-off. And Dean Bennett says, in the system the Yap wants and the style of play we saw yesterday, do you think Matty Vidra would thrive under Yap? Let's tackle the last one first.
We discussed this briefly before we came on air, didn't we? It's a nasty question because Matte Vidra is a quality player.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have shown that didn't necessarily show that all the time in a Reading shirt, as we know. But would he thrive? He'd thrive in almost any formation, provided he's got the service that goes along with his talents. We look at last season and Orlando Sarr and Matte Vidra struck up an understanding very quickly, very soon on. Sarr scored a hat-trick against Ipswich, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Vidra played in that game and some of the interplay between those, particularly if you look at the second goal, the interplay between the two, Vidra knew where Sarr was going straight away. And they did that on more than one occasion. They just didn't play often enough together. And so Vidra had almost the perfect foil in Sarr. And if you give Vidra that kind of support, then he's always gonna be fairly successful.
Yeah, and if you put him in a team that's not in a complete spiral of negativity, he'll be the first to admit, I'm sure, if you speak to him, that he had a rotten season and that's probably the worst season of his career. But if you're a betting man, gamble away, I would very much be putting my money on that literally being the worst season of his career. I don't think it'd possibly have a worse one than that.
In terms of form and mental
aptitude,
just his mental state. Yeah, it'll be easily his worst season. I don't think he'll have one worse than that.
Yeah, Notorious and Alex pointing out the first half performance as well. For me, Dave, that was the best since Watford at home under Nigel Adkins when we absolutely blew them away with a sensational first 45 minutes. Again, in the sunshine and hope was springing eternal.
Yeah.
Royston was having a great game.
Yeah, we drew the game 3-3.
Yeah.
I think you're fairly right. Watford came out second half and were, you know, significantly better than Preston were second half on Saturday. I think it certainly is one of the best first halves we've seen. Again, everything's relative. Watford were a quality side, made the changes at half time and showed that quality in the second half. Preston, as we discussed earlier, weren't on the metal. And if they were, I think it would have been a different proposition. But having said that, you can only play against what's in front of you. And Reading, pretty much wiped the floor with them.
Yeah, and Reading lost to, I'd say they lost to worse sides last season.
Yes.
So you've got to be on the ball and get those points in the bag. A couple more bits of feedback on the game itself. Ben Kempster, a vast improvement at the end of last season, but certainly not a championship winning team yet. Simon C says, good start, although a bit wary of getting carried away. Stam comes across as a great leader who really knows his stuff. Johnny, our loyal co-host who isn't here this week, simply says, Swift.
As you would do when you just forked out the best part of 50 quid on a shirt with his name on the back.
Yeah, and if you listened to the intro of last week's show, I was going to attempt to do it that voice, but I don't think I could do it justice. So go back and listen to the first 5 seconds of last week's show to get the proper reaction, because he's put the face to accompany it as well.
Yeah, bear in mind, this is a family show.
Yeah, we've already had one naughty word. We don't want to descend completely. And Rob Novarez says, emergency defenders required as soon as possible. Not right back. Otherwise, not bad at all. A bit lost for an escape from the back post Norwood. There were a couple of times when it did seem that there wasn't a lot on for the back line, and it was just sort of going across them and back to Al Habsi.
Yeah, it's one of those things that will come though, isn't it? I mean, Evans, we've already discussed him. He was adequate. But, you know, whereas Ollie Norwood would always be sort of demanding the ball within sort of 10, 15 yards away, Evans wasn't always there. But you know, if it means lobbing it back or passing it back to Al Habsi to boot it clear, fine, get it away from the goal area.
Yeah, and we've seen that. This was something brought up in our editorial sort of chat after the game. Is it easy for players to look good in that defensive midfield slot, do you think? Because Michael Hector was winning rave reviews. Even Danny Guthrie, if you remember, at the start of the season a couple of years ago, was looking great there.
It can be, yeah. Certainly if a side doesn't press particularly high up the pitch, a la Preston on Saturday, if you get a lot of the ball and you're not being pressed, then you've basically got, you know, almost, you know, free will and free reign to do with it what you want. And in some ways, Norwood was he executed that and exploited that, you know, extremely well. But if a team presses you, then you've got, that's when your ball skills really come to the fore. And if you've got a side that are putting you under pressure, that's when you need your physical dynamicism. And that's where Michael Hector really came into it. Now, Hector was good on the ball, was capable, but he had the physical side and excelled in that position. And I certainly liked him. When Martin Kuhl put him in defensive midfield against Hull back in December, I went to the Preston game 3 days prior to that, and it was so obvious that we lacked that physical presence in the middle.
They hadn't had it since Tischbowler got injured, really. No, that's what exactly. He did really well.
Exactly, and that's where Michael Hector really excelled, I felt. He, you know, in central defence, the lapses that he
switched off at times, didn't he?
Yeah, he just switched off all the time.
Not just for Reading, it was Jamaica as well. You go back and look at that Gold Cup final.
Yeah, exactly. I say he was always prone to that lapse, whereas in central midfield, you could potentially get away with it. And that's where, you know, in some ways, that's where Norwood needed that physical presence alongside him, which is what I liked with Tischbowler and himself. Mm. That, again, as you say, we lost. And Steve Clark couldn't, you know, and Brian McDermott couldn't really gather it together again.
Yeah, and you can understand whether, you know, someone like a Yepstein's going to be frustrated, because as you mentioned, he's now lost Norwood and Tischbowler, both of whom could have done that job. Yeah, Adam says, do you think George Evans is a sufficient replacement for Norwood?
We'll see. We've not seen enough of him. I'm sure if you ask a Walsall fan, they'll probably turn around and say, he's of the standard. But as I say, we'll see.
Yeah, it's one that you can't rule. I don't think you can say no, he's not. But at the same point, I don't think right now you can say yes, he is.
Absolutely, room for improvement.
Yeah,
but you know, certainly,
he's got the potential.
Potential there. And if he has, again, if he's the sort of player that doesn't have the physical side, then you've got somebody to put alongside him in Joe Vandenberg.
Exactly. And one final bit of feedback as well from Dave Stevens. He said, what I took from the game was it felt like that the one like that last year would have been 1-1 or even 2-1 to the opposition late on. And yeah, they did buckle. If you look at the amount of goals Reading conceded late on last season, they didn't. Yeah, they had that shaky moment with Al Habsi, but, you know, nice approach and something they can draw confidence from.
I think so. Yeah, pretty much. Can't really add more to that.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much to everyone who has got in touch. At the Tarlhurst End is the Twitter address, facebook.com/thetarlhurstend for your Facebook feedback. And also, if you want to get an email in, as Jack did, send it to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. And on that note as well, if you want to contribute to the Tarlhurst End website itself, also drop us an email to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. We've had quite a few new guest writers pop up. You'll be seeing a few fresh names over the past few days and weeks. And if you want to be one of those people, do get in touch. If you've got an idea of your own, or if you've seen something that you want to improve on, just give us a touch. Get in touch. We're by the fans for the fans, and I can only say, so get your feedback in. Right, that wraps up the mailbag for this week. We will wrap up this show with a look ahead to the two games for Reading this week, Plymouth and Wolves. That's in Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any Other Business.
So before we get back to championship business, we enter the EFL Cup. No, this isn't the EFL Trophy that we talked about last week. This is the old name for the League Cup. First round action against Plymouth at the Medeski Stadium on Tuesday night, tomorrow, as we sit and record this. Dave, I talked very briefly with Charles on Friday's Podcast Extra about should Yapstam rest players or should he go full strength? If you were in his position right now, what would you do? Would you be keeping largely the same team or would you be using this as a chance to see what others can do?
I would be I'd be playing a strong side with select changes, shall we say.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, with Jordan Obita getting cramp on Saturday, I'd be looking at maybe starting with the back four that finished against Preston. So that would mean a start for Tenai Watson and Gunter move into left back. Maybe you would, you know, have a bit of a shuffle. You put Jake Cooper in there potentially. At the back and move Joey Vandenberg further forward and then, you know, work from there. I'd like to see Kermigan start. I think we all know what League Two is about. It's a lot more physical than Championship and Kermigan can deal with that. Reckles, it can't, you know, it doesn't have the physical stature to deal with that. So I'd like to see that as well. But otherwise, maybe start with Harriet as well.
Yeah, I was thinking Matey might get a run out because McCleary, again, might be wise just to rest McCleary for this one.
Yeah. So, I mean, these aren't all suggestions that I'm saying we must do. These are all suggested ones that maybe, you know, Stan was probably got on his mind.
Would you be upset then as a fan if he did make a lot of change and we lost, or would you just say, I understand that, fair enough, the league's more important?
I would be disappointed if we lost, but I can, again, you know, looking at it pragmatically, you can understand why he would do that. But having said that, we haven't got the largest of squads. And I think it's about getting, some of it is about getting a level of form up together.
I think we're pretty much in agreement. I mean, Plymouth, they lost 3-0 at home to Luton on Saturday. They lost the playoff final last year, the League Two playoff final to AFC Wimbledon. Craig Tanner on loan at Plymouth last year, so chances are he'll be filling in his teammates on a couple of little weaknesses to exploit. Again, based on Saturday, though, you'd expect Reading to pick up a comfortable win here. The bookies certainly think so. Reading 8-11 on to win this game. Plymouth 3-1 chances.
Yeah, I don't think, based on what we saw on Saturday, I don't think you want to back against Plymouth, would you?
No. Expecting Reading to go through then. Again, this doesn't count for the prediction league, but what are you expecting?
Comfortable 2-0.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. And as this doesn't count, I'm going to stick with it. So there you go.
Yeah, there we go.
Then it is a real test. It is Reading's first away game under Yap. It is a trip to Molineux and Wolves. Now, they drew 2-2 with Rotherham. It could have been a lot worse when they were 2-0 down. They were down to 10 men at one stage as well, but they've nicked a point at, to use a cliche, is a tough place to go. Not that I've ever heard a manager say a place is an easy place to go. Have you?
No.
I know Brendan Rodgers was saying about Hearts. He was like, oh, you know, it's a tough place. It's got a reputation as a really tough place to go. I want to know the place. Listeners, please write in if you've heard of where these easy places to go are.
Exactly. And you've got to check out the hashtag TPTG.
Okay.
There is a hashtag out there.
Yeah, I very like it. But yeah, so they went there and they got a 2-2 draw. So come back from 2-0 down. Walter Zenger's reign starting in typically extravagant fashion. If you want to read more on his appointment as Wolves manager, go head over to Wolves blog. They've done a great little journey through his managerial career, speaking to people that were covering him at the time. It's absolutely fascinating read.
Quite a journey as well, isn't it? There's plenty of clubs there.
Yeah, it's something stupid like 15 clubs he's managed already in a 19-year career. So it's something along those lines. As I said, I'm doing that article far too much injustice. Go check it out. But Wolves, Dave, you know, we beat them at Molineux last year and drew one of the most boring games I've ever watched at the Medeski Stadium.
Sorry, mate, we lost to them.
At Molineux? Oh, no. Molineux.
We lost on Boxing Day 1-0. On live on
TV. We did. I'm thinking of the year before when Pogrebniak scored.
Yeah,
after
30-odd seconds. Yeah. It's easy to forget a game in which we should have absolutely...
James Henry scored, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, you are right. Yeah, the last two seasons have this horrible habit of blending into one another, especially
they do.
In the league.
They
but anyway,
do, don't they?
But again, my unprofessional joke of preparation shining through there. So, but you know, you get what you pay for, which in this podcast is, unless you're one of our very generous crowdfunders, hint, hint, you get this for free, so what do you expect?
Nicely covered.
Yeah, I like to get my excuses in early. But yeah, okay, so, you know, a ground we lost at, but generally, we've got a really good record at Molineux. It's a place we do well at.
We have had our fair share of defeats there. It's always a relatively happy hunting ground for Reading. And you look at the side they've put out, there's nothing really there that scares the hell out of you. And there's no reason why we can't take a point up there at the very least.
Yeah, they've lost a lot of tea since in the past couple of years. They've got rid of Sacco and Afobe. It's not really a lot to frighten you up front. I mean, yeah, James Henry did score that goal in former club syndrome and all that jazz, but there's not a lot. There is not a lot. I mean, they've been talking about they've just had a takeover. So they've been talking about bringing in some big names, but thankfully for Reading, they've not come in. But if they do come in, they'll...
Weren't they linked with a £20 million player?
Yeah, they were linked with Ola John as well.
I'm just looking at that and, you know, really?
I know. That's the way the Championship's going. So the bookies are finding this one quite tough looking at the early odds. Wolves are 6-5. And any time you're above odd evens for a home game is slightly worrying. It's not often you see that.
Yeah, it's value though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You look at it from a betting perspective and there are many people that would put down that on their accumulator just purely on the value. Again, we simply don't know what's going to happen. Mm. Reading's game was very much a one-off on Saturday. Wolves, very much a slow start. I mean, Walter Zenger had, three, four, 5 days or whatever it was to prepare for it. All of the incoming transfers and all the legwork had been done by Kenny Jackett.
Mm.
Seemed a very strange time to sack. Indeed. But then again, at the same time, new owners got their own ideas and whatnot. And presumably in the first 20 minutes, that showed. But you know, they went and got the draw and it came back from 2-0 down. Fair play to them, shows a bit of grit and determination, to coin a phrase. It's undoubtedly going to be a tough game, undoubtedly.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Obviously they're in EFL Cup action as well, so a chance for them to get out that first win under their belt. So yeah, the bookies have got it 6-5 for Wolves, the draw is 11-5, and Reading are 12-5 to pick up all 3 points.
1 point. Is Dominic Iorfa suspended for it, or is it just a one match ban?
My inclination is because it will be I think it was two yellows, so it should be a one match ban, but I'm not entirely convinced on that, so I don't want to stake my reputation. Tune into the podcast extra on Friday with myself and Charles. We'll have full team news and a much more comprehensive preview then. Again, my nice work getting out of that one. But anyway, one thing I'm not going to get out of is the prediction league, because one man in this room is top of the league, correctly predicting a 1-0 victory. Yours truly. Bidding to regain my crown from that villainous Johnny Williams.
Some of us are off the mark as well, though.
We are. Yeah, Dave, you are joint second in the table with Westy.
Yeah.
You absolutely. Went 2-1, wasn't it?
I went a 2-1. Yeah, I thought we'd concede.
Yeah. Yeah, Westy went for a 2-0 win, so you two pick up a single point for getting the correct result. Johnny and Charles Watts both went for draws, so they are at the bottom. Last year's top two, not starting off well. But they're not here. You are. So, Dave, I'm going to let you go first. I do have predictions from Johnny and Westy to give.
Interesting. Right, okay, I'll go first. I will go with a jackpot draw, 1-1. Good old Paul's talk there.
It is a 1-1 for Dave. I am going to go for a... I'm going to shoot myself in the foot by being positive here, and I'm going to say Reading are going to nick this 1-0.
Kudos to you if they do.
Yeah. Johnny has gone for 2-1 to Wolves, his negative streak continuing. Ooh. And Westy has gone him... Going to have to dig out my text message here very quickly. Gripping listening for all our listeners here. He's gone for 1-1.
Ah,
like you.
Lovely stuff.
So you are guaranteed to be in the same place as each other next week. I will get Charles's prediction on Friday in the podcast extra. And with that, that concludes the show. So again, a big thank you to Kevin Doyle for giving us his time. Big thank you to everyone who has sent in their feedback as well. And Dave, big thank you to you for turning out.
No worries.
Ever present so far this season.
Through all
Speaking
the traffic.
Speaking of the man, Alan West... I said he'd retired, but next week, again, if you looked at our Facebook video, you'll realise we're recording this pretty early, and that is due to my working commitments, which continue next week, so I have to record early on. And I was faced with a jam. There was no Johnny. Dave, I've not asked you yet, but I'm presuming you might be in the mix again next week. Live on air, doing our business.
Nods my head. Yeah.
He does nod his head. Yeah. So we had an empty seat again, and the only man that could fill it is Alan West, making his long-awaited return. His cameo appearance now that he's rode off into the sunset, but he will return next week.
He's given himself a squad number.
He has. He's come out of retirement to help us out. You know, we're a bit short at the back.
Sit on the bench.
Indeed. So, yeah, Westie's hopefully, obviously things can happen in the next 7 days, but fingers crossed Westie will be here with us next week as well. So if you've missed him and you thought, oh, these guys aren't as good as the old guys, you know, 1 week you can listen again. But if you're hearing this, you're listened anyway. So
absolutely. Yeah, quite. It'll be good to hear his dulcet tones again, though.
It will. And he might be top
dulcet
of
dulcet tones.
Yeah, and if hopefully, well, from your point of view, you'll be top of the prediction league, so that's something to crow about.
Hopefully.
Right, anyway, that wraps up the show. As I said, 2 games for Reading. Hopefully we'll be in the second round of the Cup and sitting pretty with 2 wins from 2. We'll be back Monday with the main edition of the show. And as I said, this Friday, I'll sit down with Charles to talk ahead of that Wolves game, reflect on the Plymouth result as well. So tune in then. Head over to thetarlhurstend.com. Lots of great content up on the Preston game. We've got our player ratings, which are generating plenty of debate. You can go check out those tactic articles. They're written slightly before the season, but they're still very relevant. You'll if you check them out, you'll realise just how right Will got it in terms of his tactical previews as well. We've got some guest articles as well. Hunty, Johnny Hunt. He started his new regular column. Go check out his first article as well. And tomorrow as well, as we record this, we'll have a little piece up comparing the midfield of this season to the 94-95 midfield, Dave.
Ooh, that'll be good.
It is.
So, 94-95 season is a classic one.
Indeed. So you can see whether you agree with the inspector who writes for us as well this season. So lots to look forward to on thetarlhurstend.com and also on this podcast over the season. So thanks again, and we will see you next week. In the meantime, come on, you arse.
You arse.